21 March is significant for a number of reasons. Obviously, here in South Africa, it is Human Rights Day. It also happens to be the International Day of Forests. It's World Poetry Day. Big Bang Day for space enthusiasts, apparently. It is Namibia's Independence Day. It's World Down Syndrome Day. It's the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. But for our focus today, it is World Fragrance Day. It's all about celebrating and promoting the art and science of perfume making and encouraging people to appreciate how much fragrance means in our lives. And anybody who lost their sense of smell during COVID will know how profoundly our awareness of fragrance impacts our lives. Nobody knows that better than my guest today, who has really spent decades immersed in the world of scent. Sue Phillips is a Cape Town-born perfumier who these days lives and works in New York City. And from her early days working for some of the big global beauty brands, she's gone on to establish her own atelier called Sue Phillips House of Fragrance, making bespoke scents for brands and for individuals. Some of her celebrity clients have included Susan Sarandon, Kanye West, Jamie Foxx, Zendaya, Lawrence Fishburne. I could go on and on. She has made bespoke perfume for some very, very famous people and for some very, very big brands. She's also gotten up very, very early to talk to us this morning as she joins us via Zoom from New York. Sue, it's wonderful to have you back on the show again. Thank you for taking the time to get up early to be with us today, to talk about scent, to answer listeners' questions about wearing fragrance, and to share your story. Welcome back to Cape Talk.
Thank you so much, Pippa. It's so wonderful to be with you. Thank you very much for having me. Yes, I got up an hour earlier because I was confused about the time, but now we're on. So thank you.
We've got you, and we've got you for the remainder of the hour. So I hope that listeners will take the opportunity to ask questions around fragrance. Before we dive into the conversation about making fragrances and how to wear them and how to choose them, Sue, won't you just briefly tell us how a girl from Cape Town ends up doing this as a profession?
Well, actually, I lived in Cape Town, but I was born in Johannesburg and then went to Cape Town to study at UCT drama, because at 10 years old, I was in theater. Mm-hmm. And then I got the acting bug. And of course, I wanted to study acting and I went to UCT. So left Johannesburg, went to Cape Town, was there, loved Cape Town. It's always been a favorite spot of mine, but then wanted to go to RADA, Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London. And unfortunately, there were about 5,000 applicants for about five spots. Ooh. And I didn't get in, but I came to New York at the time of the bicentennial in New York because my brother was living here. And then I really fell in love with New York and the energy and the vibrancy, and went to an immigration attorney who said that he would sponsor me. And I landed up eventually, after getting my green card, with three job offers. One was to work in a bank, which was not for me. One was to work in fashion. And at the time, I didn't feel I knew anything about fashion. But the third job offer really resonated with me. It was to work at Elizabeth Arden. And I thought that cosmetics and fragrance and theater were synergistic. So that's how I started it in the cosmetic industry at Elizabeth Arden. And because I had a theatrical background, I landed up in the training area for fragrance. I became the national training director for fragrances like Chloe and Lagerfeld and Burberry. Then they promoted me ultimately to cosmetics for color and then marketing. And then Lancome hired me for marketing for fragrance and men's skincare. And then finally, Tiffany hired me as executive vice president. Pippa, if you'd have told me growing up in South Africa that one day I would be executive vice president of Tiffany, creating the Tiffany fragrance, I'd say you're crazy. But that all took place in the span of 12 years. So that was really my full running expertise in the fragrance industry. And then I'll tell you the rest of it, but you can ask me questions and I'll tell you where things landed up.
Well, you've landed up making your own fragrances, and not just making fragrances for big brands to put into big production, but also making bespoke, individualized fragrances, which is what I found, I think, most fascinating about your story, Sue. The idea that you don't have to go out and choose between the same scents that everybody else is wearing. You can come and have one designed to suit your personality and your particular fragrance palette, I guess we can call it. I mean, is that a big thing in New York? I know that there are one or two people who will do it here in South Africa, but it's certainly not a, a mainstream concept. How popular is the idea of creating your own fragrance for normal human beings? For celebrities, it's a different world, but for the rest of us?
Right. Well, it's definitely growing, and mm-hmm. I really believe that I was at the forerunning of this whole initiative, because after I left Tiffany to have my daughter, I started consulting, and I created fragrances for Burberry and Avon and Trish McAvoy and Lancaster. And then the economy crashed in 2008, and that was when I had a pivotal moment. I said, okay, self, what do I do now? And because I'd learned so much about fragrance, and because I'm South African with, you know, the whole English background of understanding what bespoke meant, and nobody really in America knew what the term mm-hmm. bespoke meant, that was when I started thinking about bespoke fragrances. And I went to a lab, and I worked with a lab and perfumers, and I really created 18 different fragrances. And then when I started the custom fragrance or bespoke business, people said to me, what are you doing? Tupperware parties for perfume? And they laughed. And what's happened now is that the whole idea of customization has become so popular, and the whole niche category of fragrance has become more popular. So I really was at the sort of foreground of this whole initiative, and I started it 12, 14 years ago. And I have to say honestly that I always say to people, why wear what everybody else wears when you can create your own? And so the idea of having a signature scent or having a personalized fragrance that really reflects who you are is a remarkable situation. And you don't have to be a celebrity to have it, because we do it in a very affordable yet still luxurious way.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about what's involved in that process as the hour continues. I just want to say, for anybody who's tuned in a little late this afternoon, my guest joining us via Zoom from New York City is Sue Phillips, who is a South African-born perfumier now living and working in New York City, and has her own atelier producing custom bespoke fragrances for the stars and everybody else. Now, to make a fragrance, you've referenced, you came up with your 18 different scent mixes, if I can call it that. Sue, how big is the palette you can draw on when creating a fragrance? I know you often hear people talk about the olfactory palette and the fragrance families, but I seem to hear different variations of how many there are and sort of which are taken more seriously. Do you want to give us a bit of an introduction to the tools that you work with as your starting point?
Yes, that's a great question. I would love to. You know, I always correlate fragrance with art and music, because these synergistic aspects are so so aligned. So I always say that in art, you have three primary colors, yellow, blue, and red. And of course, the neutrals are black and white. But think about when you mix the art, the three primary colors, you get secondary colors and tertiary colors. So all the colors in the world come from those three primary colors. It's remarkable when you think about it. Mm. And then in music, you have eight notes, which is an octave. We're talking about the notes from C to C, the white notes. And so think about every genre of music, hip hop, classic, folk, rock, whatever, comes from those eight notes in an octave. So with fragrance, there are so many fragrances, but it really comes from eight main fragrance families. You have your citrus notes, which are all the light, bright citrus notes, lemon, lime, orange, grapefruit, neroli. Then you have the fruity notes, which is all the wonderful, luscious berry notes and the, all the edible notes, the berries, the coconuts, the all the lovely lychee. I think about lychee and I think of sitting on the beach on Musenberg. So then you have the florals, all the floral notes, rose, jasmine, lily of the valley, gardenia, cyclamen, and frangipani. Then you have the spicy notes, everything that's in your spice cabinet. Then you have a category that's called chypre. I don't know if you've ever heard of chypre, C-H-Y-P-R-E. So that's those earthy, mossy, patchouli, bold, wonderful notes. It comes from the island of Cyprus, and that was the name that was given to it. Then you have the woodsy notes, sandalwood, birchwood, cedarwood. Then you have something called the fougère, which is the French word for fern, those lovely leafy green fern notes, which are mostly the aromatic notes, lavender, rosemary, thyme, anise. And then finally, you have the animalic notes, which is where musk comes from and ambergris. We don't really use anything from animals anymore. But those eight families are really the aspects of how all the fragrances are categorized. And so a lot of people think that that's a lot, it's very complicated. So I basically narrowed it down to four main families: fresh, floral, woodsy, and spicy. And that's a lot easier to comprehend. So when I create the fragrances and I want to really have a complete olfactive palette, I look at all the fragrance families, those eight fragrance families, and then I start to combine, mix and match, and really, combine different aspects of it to give beautiful fragrances. And each one is a blend that ultimately, when you meet with me or you take a look at my website and see all the fragrance blends that I have, it's easy to comprehend the aspects and the different fragrance notes of the fresh florals, the woodsy, the citrus, the musky, the animalic. And so fragrance is very complex. It's both an art and a science. And what I try to do is create a beautiful, magical experience for people so that when they meet with me and they take our scent quiz, which I'll be happy to tell you about, it really reflects their individuality and their personality, whether they are a combination of fresh or floral or woodsy or spicy.
I love the idea that a quiz helps guide you to your starting point. What are some of the questions you would ask somebody in that quiz?
Well, the quiz is actually, you could even go online to suephillipsfragrance.com and take the scent quiz. So it's a lifestyle quiz. There's only one fragrance question, but
Interesting.
it's, what season do you like? What time of day do you like? What kind of fabrics do you like to wear? What are the aspects of things that you would like to own in your home? For instance, a Limoges china or a beautiful mahogany table. What kinds of celebrities do you think are most iconic? When I started this, I had celebrities and iconic figures like Katharine Hepburn and Greta Garbo and Marilyn Monroe, and none of the millennials knew who they were. So I had to change it to, Julia Ro Juliet Roberts, and then some of the men are Jamie Foxx and Bradley Cooper. So things change as well with the decades, so that not everything stays the same. But in terms of, the seasons, the hour of the day, what activities do you like to do? That's pretty constant. And when you take the quiz, it really reflects your individuality and your personality. It's
Interesting.
remarkable. I put this together many years ago. And of course, I changed the celebrities or the iconic figures, but all the other questions are pretty much the same. The one fragrance question is, what do you like to smell? What kind of situations give you a wonderful olfactive moment? Fresh, newly baked bread, the smell of the ocean. So those are, wonderful books from a library, the actual pages. Can you actually smell books from the library? So that's the only sort of fragrance question. And I'd be really interested if your guests and your viewers took the quiz to see what their response is, because it's pretty accurate for both men and women.
Fascinating. Sue, speaking of the way tastes change and things come and go, celebrities fall out of popular culture, so too do
Right.
fragrances. Before we break to go to the quick news headlines, we will be back after that, by the way. A quick message from Tammy, who wants to know whether it's possible to recreate a perfume from many years ago. She says, "I'd love to be able to buy my 90-year-old mom a bottle of her favorite Avon scent from the 1970s, but it simply isn't made anymore. Is it possible? Has somebody kept a sort of a Bible of the notes and components of big fragrances that they could potentially be reconstituted?"
Yes, and great question, Tammy. Thank you. So I get this all the time from people who are so besotted about the fragrances that either they've had or their family members have had, and they want to recreate it. And so I go on into the research folders and the research Bibles of what the notes were from these various fragrances, and I can reconstitute it to a certain extent. The reason so many fragrances have been discontinued, either the ingredients are no longer able to be sourced, or they just, again, as you said, things change and suddenly they're not popular anymore. And something that was very popular 10 years ago is not popular now. So the companies discontinue it. So I have been asked to reconstitute and reformulate fragrances, which I can do up to about 85 to 90%. I never say I can do it 100% because sometimes I can't get those ingredients. But, I created the Tiffany fragrance and the original one, and they discontinued it. And I now have people contacting me to say, Sue, can you recreate it? And actually, I've created it to a certain extent.
We continue our conversation about World Fragrance Day. For those who might just be tuning in, joining us via Zoom from New York City is Sue Phillips, a South African-born perfumier to the stars. These days, she runs her own house of fragrance on Lexington Avenue, creates bespoke, custom-made fragrances for the likes of Kanye West and Zendaya and Jamie Foxx and others. And she has spent many decades working both for big brands and for individual customers, unlocking the power of scent. Now, before the break, at the start of the show, I was talking about the significant role of scent and memory. And it's interesting to see that reflecting in the WhatsApps coming through. Let me just share a couple more of your comments about particular scent memories before we put any more questions to Sue. One person saying, my ex-Italian girlfriend used to wear Christian Dior Poison Hypnotic. This is 20 years ago when we were living in London. Whenever I smell it, wherever I am immediately transported back to that time in my life. A very unique and completely incredible fragrance. For somebody else, it's Anaïs Cacharel. Patricia says, I've been wearing it since 1976. Only disappointment is that I really struggle to find it these days at fragrance counters. I used to use all of the products, the soap, the body creams, etc. But between the lack of supply and the high prices, it's no longer possible. But she says, my grandchildren always associate me with that fragrance. Now, Sue, Patricia has touched on something that several people have asked about, layering fragrance. Is there anything you can do to make a scent last longer? Because you can step out of the house ready to go to a party, drenched in your favorite scent, and then within an hour, it feels like it's not there anymore. What can one do to make it last a little bit longer?
Well, that is another great question and a great comment, because what's happened is the reason fragrances don't last as long as they used to is because certain regulations have insisted that the concentration cannot be over a certain percentage.
Okay.
So, fragrances used to be, and actually in certain countries, there are no regulations. So in the Middle East, for instance, you can have a fragrance that'll last you for a week, but that's not the way it is in the US. And I'm sure in other sort of countries as well, like your, Western countries.
Yeah.
So I always say that you should wear an unscented soap, an unscented lotion, or an unscented gel if you can find them. Because when you wear a soap or a gel or a lotion, it has its own fragrance. And then that leaves a residue on your body. And then you have to apply your fragrance, which is probably, much more expensive than that, but not as volatile. And so if you can wear unscented lotion, the fragrance then will adhere to the unscented lotion and then it'll last longer. So you don't have any conflicting. Think about this. We have scented soaps. We have scented hair gels, scented shampoos, scented conditioner. The world has so many scented bath and body products. And then you put on your beautiful perfume, expected to overpower all those harsh bath and body products. It's a challenge for the perfume. So that's my suggestion.
So give it a plain base to sit on. I hear you. What about a lot of people like to spray it either a little on their clothes or in their hair even. Somebody asking, does that help? Does it help to in terms of keeping the scent going longer to spray it on your clothes or hair?
Well, I also think that spraying on your clothes is not a good idea because depending on the volatility of the fragrance, it could stain your clothes, number one. And the next time you wear that outfit, you might not want to wear the same fragrance. So it's going to really it stick to the fibers of the fabric, and it might destroy the fibers, depending if it's cotton or silk or a really expensive fabric. So I don't really advise spraying fragrance on your clothes. And also spraying fragrance in your hair, you're going to have the same issue. If you have a scented shampoo and scented conditioner, and then suddenly you spray your fragrance, you're going to have such a compilation of mixtures of odors, it's not going to be a good idea. Fragrance is really meant to be worn on the skin at the pulse points, and at the pulse points where the body temperature is the warmest. And the reason we spray it at the pulse points is because when you have the fragrance at the pulse points, it sort of, we always say fragrance, right? Heat, hot air rises. And so at the pulse points, it's the warmest part of your skin. So at the pulse points, at the nape of the neck, and also spray the fragrance in the breast area, in the bosom, as I like to say, so that you wear the fragrance, surrounding your body so that it can really rise and envelop you.
Sue, one of our listeners asking on the WhatsApp line if you could please explain the difference between parfum and eau de toilette.
Absolutely. So perfume is the strongest, most concentrated form of fragrance. It has the highest form of the concentration of essential oils. And as you mix it with alcohol and, well, denatured alcohol and water, it becomes less diluted. So perfume or parfum is the most concentrated and the strongest. As you dilute it with more water and alcohol, it becomes eau de parfum. So perfume could be up to 25 or 30% concentration. Eau de parfum could be 20 to 25% concentration. Then you have eau de toilette, which could be 15 to 20% concentration. Then you have eau de cologne, which could be 10 to 15%. And then there's something which is a new sort of term called eau fraiche, which is about 5%. So the more you dilute your fragrance with denatured alcohol and water, it becomes less concentrated. So that's the reason. And all people say, oh, well, colognes are for men and perfume and eau de parfum are for women. Actually, women can wear cologne and men can wear perfume. So there's no gender when it comes to perfume. Perfume is for everybody.
Isn't that interesting? Because I know a number of brands are starting to market sort of cross-gender scents. And so CK1 was the first one I was aware of doing that, saying it's for boys and girls, wear it if it makes you feel good. And I still do to this day. But I'm so glad you referenced that because there was such an interesting story that came in, if I can just find it on our WhatsApp line here, referencing this notion of the different variations for men and women. One of our listeners writes, "A happy fragrance day. My go-to fragrance happened when I attended a gay bar. I'd been invited by my sister-in-law, and one of the clients walked past me, wafted past me with this absolutely magnificent, unique fragrance. I had to go and ask what it was, and he told me it was Dune by Christian Dior for men. Coincidentally, my son-in-law came back from New Zealand that year in time for Mother's Day and gifted me a bottle of Dune for females, and I am still hooked on the fragrance ever since." So I mean, you can find something attractive and appealing and love the way it smells on yourself, even if it wasn't necessarily marketed at you. Isn't that the beauty of finding what works for you and what you love and not caring what anybody else says you're meant to do with it? Sue, do you find, I mean, do you, when you have a client come to you, do they say, "I want a very masculine scent or a very feminine scent"? Is that one of the things you would factor in, or have those sort of differentials started to fall away in the age of a unisex fragrance?
Well, both actually. Some people say, oh, some actually, some men, and it's so interesting. Some women say, "I don't love florals." And some men say, "Oh, I love florals," but they're so nervous about even admitting it because, the concern is, oh, well, florals are for women and colognes and, woodsy are for men. The fact of the matter is, there's no gender when it comes to ingredients. There's not, masculine oranges and female bananas. No, there are ingredients that are don't have a gender. And so the idea that, you know, fragrances have been around for centuries and centuries, and men can love florals. In fact, European men love florals, American men not so much, but it's a very good idea to start educating people that they should love ingredients that make them feel happy. And I always say that in the US, everybody loves fresh and clean. I would think the same is true for South Africa. Fresh and clean fragrances that are good for men and women. In Europe, they love florals. In England, they love lavenders. In South America, they love spicy fragrances. And in the Middle East, they love oud and incense. And it's really interesting to see how different cultures really respond to different fragrances, which is the same in terms of food. Think about it.
Yeah.
You know, food, spicy food, you know, the South Americans love. English like very bland food. So it's very interesting that food and flavor and fragrance are very connected. And in terms of fragrances for men and fragrances for women, go for it, whatever you love. If men love rose and love floral fragrances, it's okay. They can enjoy it because that's what makes them happy.
And I just want to mention to listeners that in after 2 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to replay for you an interview with Indian American author Alka Joshi, whose book The Perfumist of Paris deals with the manufacture of perfume, and particularly those wonderful spicy notes adopted out of Indian perfume making traditions. So please stay with us for that after 2 o'clock. Sue, I want to pick up on something you said a little bit earlier about the ingredients. You mentioned that the use of animal ingredients is no longer a part of perfume industry, and I'm so glad you've made reference to that, because I know a lot of people used to worry about the use of ambergris, which was a product, a substance derived from whales. Do I understand you correctly in saying that is no longer in use at all?
Well, certainly not in America because of the FDA and the regulations, but I will tell you that there are a lot of synthetic versions of musk and ambergris. And so for people who don't know what ambergris is, it's spelled ambergris, or A-M-B-E-R-G-R-I-S, ambergris, you pronounce it, or ambergris. It's actually from the sperm whale, the male whale. And I always tell my clients, you know, perfumers have been looking for interesting ingredients for centuries. They travel the oceans, the cities, the forests, really in search of innovative ingredients. And here was a story about the situation that happened. The sperm whale, when it imbibes cuttlefish, the bones from the cuttlefish irritate his stomach lining. So what does he do? He regurgitates, and the sweet, sticky substance washes up on the shore. Now, you can imagine how much ambergris has to wash up on the shore for perfumers to find this and then to harness it and to eventually extract the oil from the ambergris to create and have a yield of a kilo or a pound or whatever it is. It's incredibly expensive. And so they don't hurt the whales for that, but it's just incredibly expensive. And so they don't use ambergris, real ambergris. Perhaps in Morocco and Middle East they do, because that's where it's found. But if you Google ambergris, you'll see about 5 or 6 months ago, there was a story about a group of Chinese fishermen who were literally walking on the shore, and they came across this mound of ambergris.
I remember that, yes.
They were able to take it and sell it for $1 million. It's incredibly expensive. So, and musk comes from the deer or the civet cat. And so when they get a little frisky, how or why those perfumers found those musky notes, we don't know. We're not sure about that. But it really comes from the deer and the civet cat. But we don't use anything from animals anymore. And so that is why so many fragrances have a very similar smell and a very similar aroma, because they're all derived now from chemicals and synthetics. Nice.
I just want to repeat again for anybody who might have joined us late to the conversation that our guest joining us from New York City is Parfumia Sue Phillips, born in South Africa, these days making bespoke fragrances from New York and talking to us about the fragrance industry, about her career in the industry, and also answering questions that you are asking, which I hope you'll keep going. We've got about another 10 minutes or so before we say goodbye to Sue. So please ask away if you'd like to know anything about your favorite scent or about scent in general. Some lovely memories being shared with us. Sue, let me read a few more of these memories. WhatsApp saying, sure. I've just lost my mum at 96 years young. She would have been 97 in February. I'm so sorry for your loss. But I love this. My best memories of my mum are of her bluegrass fragrance. Somebody else telling me, I'm in my 80s now, but I have a clear memory of my mom wearing a perfume, which I think was called Midnight Velvet. So many people are saying what my mom wore, what my granny wore. What do you think it is? Let's talk a little bit about scent and memory. Do we know from a sort of a neurodevelopmental perspective, Sue, why fragrance triggers memory as it does?
Well, I love all these questions, all these comments, and actually our sense of smell, our olfactory sense, is our most powerful. Our strongest sense is our sense of sight, but the most powerful is our sense of smell. Why? Because it connects to the limbic system. It connects to the memory and the emotions, and it also connects to taste. So taste, memory, emotions, it's really powerful. And all these wonderful comments. I mean, I know bluegrass. I worked at Elizabeth Arden. It was one of the fragrances that they had. Without our sense of smell, you cannot enjoy life. And I will tell you, I just want to hop over to the whole idea of what happened in COVID. When people lost their sense of smell and they had anosmia and then parosmia, which is scent distortion, that one of the symptoms of COVID was anosmia, which is loss of smell. And I actually have helped over 250 people regain their sense of smell. When I wrote my book called The Power of Perfume, and NBC wanted to do a story about it, and they brought in a woman who had been a long hauler. She had not been able to smell for 15 months. And I took her on a scent journey, which I then called a scent healing journey. And she tried all the 18 fragrances, and she tried one, couldn't smell, two, no, nothing, three, four, five, 10, 12. And, you know, the TV crew was there, and we were trying to get a breakthrough. And finally, on the 14th one, whichever one it was a very heavy, beautiful, I think a vanilla fragrance. She suddenly said, I smell something, and it's beautiful. And she started to cry. And this was after 15 months of not being able to smell. So, you know, people don't really think about their sense of smell on a day-to-day basis. We get up, we wash, we get dressed, we have breakfast, tea, lunch, dinner, whatever. We go about our day. But when you've lost your sense of smell, people's lives are diminished. They just can't enjoy food. They can't enjoy socialization. They don't want to go out because everything revolves around food. And if you have food and you can't taste it and you can't smell it, it really becomes a problem. So I always say to people, honor your sense of smell. And literally, that is why one of the adages, stop and smell the roses, I think happened. It's a century old adage, stop and smell the roses and enjoy life, because our sense of smell is so vital to our well-being.
Some really interesting comments and questions coming in now around the way our sense of smell and of our taste in fragrances change as we age. One comment, for example, saying perfumes that I liked when I was younger just don't seem to smell nice on me anymore. Is it possible that a fragrance will smell different on two different people? First part of the question. And secondly, is that person onto something, that our own bodies may change? Obviously, we know they change as we age. Would the way scent interacts with them change accordingly?
Absolutely. Number one, our scent, our actual tastes change. You know, what you like as a kid, maybe something very sweet and very luscious and fruity and edible, is not going to be the same that you like as an adult, which might be a little more sophisticated or more spicy or more exotic, you know. So that's the first thing. Yes, our tastes and in life and in food and fashion and colors changes as well. And then as far as fragrances changing, definitely the fragrances that were made 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago are not the same formulas that we have today. And that is because so many ingredients have been discontinued or have been deregulated, or the FDA is saying, you can't have certain ingredients. What always fascinates me is that peanuts that give people anaphylactic shock and gives people terrible allergies and sometimes can harm them are still able to be sold. So what is the harm in a beautiful fragrance that, has been banned? But that's what happens. And the reason the fragrances have been are changed is because the formulas definitely change.
Speaking of allergies, a couple of people saying they really struggle because they get allergic to so many perfumes. And Cheryl, in Cheryl's case, saying, I've got a husband who's really allergic. I have to be very, very careful what I wear. She says, I used to use Byzance by Rochas. More recently, now also discontinued, was Van Cleef by Van Cleef & Arpels. And I really search for them at duty free when traveling with no luck. Oh, it must be awful, particularly knowing that you've got to be so super, super careful, Cheryl, not only in choosing one that you like, but one that your husband won't react to. Do a lot of people have that problem, Sue, that they get allergic, and is it to particular ingredients, or what do we know about that?
Well, I have been in the fragrance industry for 44 years. I have never heard more complaints of headaches and allergies than I have in the last 5 to 7 years.
Gosh.
And honestly, it's because so many fragrances have been changed, the formulas change, and the formulas have been now recalibrated, and the fragrance has been recalibrated and reformulated with synthetics. And the synthetics is what is giving people headaches and allergies. I will tell you that when I go into Saks or Bloomingdale's or Bergdorf's or Macy's to check out new fragrances, I'm there for about 10 minutes smelling things and I leave with a horrible headache because they're just so volatile. And just to give a very personal plug, the fragrances that I've developed are high quality and beautiful and natural. And I will tell you that I've never had anybody complain of headaches or allergies with my fragrances. And that's one of the most important aspects of what I try and offer, because I could get on the competitive bandwagon and come up with ouds and synthetic fragrances and have a lot less expensive, but then risk the possibility of clients saying, forget it, the fragrances are awful, they give me headaches. So to me, quality is really important. And it's hard sometimes to find quality fragrances in these commercial stores.
Okay, so that's to the person who was asking, what is oud in perfume? Am I understanding you correctly, Sue? It's a synthetic molecule that is used in perfume making.
Actually, the word oud comes from the French oud, which the literal translation is wood, sandalwood. But in the Middle East, one of the most popular ingredients is oud, which has come from the agar wood tree, and the agar berries are what the goats cling for. And the goats, if you've ever been to Morocco, you see goats climbing up on the trees, literally to get the agar berry. And within the agar berry is a little nut, and that's what they want. And within the oud, that's what perfumers found, which is a really beautiful, exotic, wonderful, sensual fragrance, which has become very, very popular around the world now. And the trouble is that oud is very, very expensive. So there are synthetic versions of oud which give people headaches.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Before we must say goodbye, one last question from Sandy, which kind of leads into a question I wanted to ask you. Sandy's asking whether it's possible for perfumes to go rancid or go off in some way. I wanted to ask you, Sue, what we can do to make our perfume hold on to sort of its integrity for as long as possible. I think the two are really two sides of the same question.
Sure. Well, keep your fragrance, not necessarily in the fridge, but in a cool place that is unaffected by direct sunlight and heat. So a beautiful perfume in a perfume bottle, if you open it, make sure you seal it very tightly so it doesn't open, it doesn't leak. And try not to put a fragrance in direct sunlight or next to the air conditioner or next to the heater, because the extreme temperatures are going to affect the fragrance. And also, sorry, fragrances really could last up to 5 years or so, as long as they're sealed tightly. and they're not exposed to all these different temperatures. You know, a lot of us keep fragrances in the bathroom, and if you take a shower and all the steam is there and the fragrances have been used, it could affect the fragrance longevity for sure. And fragrances could turn. If a fragrance is natural, a perfume has more natural ingredients. If you leave it exposed to direct sunlight or air or heat or cold, you'll see it'll start to change color. It'll start to go darker or darker, or it might go lighter and lighter, and then all the beautiful volatile ingredients are dissipated.
Sue, it's been such a learning curve for all of us and such a delight to have you on the show. Our WhatsApp line is full of people saying how much they've appreciated listening to your wealth of knowledge. I want to leave them with your contact information so that if they'd like to read up more about your particular fragrances, which can be shipped to South Africa, by the way, and just to look for your book or find out more about your work with Anosmia, for example. You mentioned your website. Won't you just repeat that for us, please?
Sure, suephillips.com, and it's two L's, www.suephillips.com. I'm all over the internet on Instagram, Scentfully Sue. My company is Scentreprises with a SC, Scentreprises, the real Sue Phillips and Sue Phillips Fragrance. And by the way, you can also reach me on WhatsApp under Sue Phillips. And I, if you want, I can, you can give them my number if you'd like. But I would love to hear from people. It makes me so feeling such warm feelings of happiness listening to your questions and listening to you, Pippa, and hearing people so interested in fragrance. I'm delighted to hear from everybody and would love to stay in touch. I'd love to come and visit South Africa again and do some fragrance classes. So
that would
hopefully
be
sometime soon.
Please do keep in touch with us, Sue. We'd love to get you into studio, perhaps in front of a live studio audience, to continue the conversation the next time you're in Cape Town. For now, though, we say thank you and goodbye to perfumier Sue Phillips.